This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and you're listening to The Morning Run, and it's time for The Property Show. Now, arguably, quality building designs and attractive architecture have a positive impact on real estate prices. It also goes beyond that. The right architecture can not only command better prices, it can also save energy costs as well as enhance building safety. This morning on The Property Show, Keith Kam speaks to Sali Audrey Ksarkum, the Deputy President of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, also known as PAM, about the issue.
Sali, take us through the role that Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia plays in Malaysia's property market.
PAM is a learned society of architects, and I think the biggest role that we play is to inform society about what architecture and architects are all about and how architecture and architects actually bring value to any property. Yeah, because a lot of people... A lot of people who are looking just at the bottom line don't see how the effect of architecture that the architecture has on a certain property, and it could be huge. In Malaysia, sometimes we are the victim of our own success.
Okay.
If you're building something in a good location, it gets sold out almost immediately. Nobody
Correct.
Even looks at the design.
Correct.
But they forget that, you know, if it's, say, for example, a strata condominium and it's not designed properly, the maintenance fees would be huge. And this would be transferred to the management corporation later.
And the building owners.
Yeah, the building owners. And at the end of the day, the building might not even work. And there'll be problems maintaining the building and so on and so forth. So it does affect the value later on. And you can see there are a lot of clear examples of shopping complexes who are not doing very well simply because of design.
Could you just share with us some typical mistakes people make when it comes to architectural designs that are not conducive to value?
Without naming names,
oh, yeah.
Of course. Example, if you design a condominium in the way that you design a hotel, that right. you need air conditioning for the common areas, that would be a huge drain. You think that it is not logical, but there are, in KL, condominiums that are designed this way. And this cost of maintaining the corridors, air condition, right. and maintaining the air condition, the mechanical parts of the air condition itself, we will pass on to the JMB or the MC later on.
And the homeowners, obviously.
Which is the homeowners. So they cannot even bear the cost later on. Yeah.
Can these things be rectified as time goes on?
That is the thing. It's always cheaper to do it initially rather than as a retrofit. The rule is, if it's a retrofit, it's going to be more difficult and it's going to be more hassle for the owners. So that is where I think education and where PAM can play a role in educating the general public on what is good design.
And how have you seen the real estate scene in the country evolve vis-a-vis architectural knowledge?
With increased prosperity and, of course, technological advancement, I think our architecture has improved a lot, yeah. And we are glad to see a resurgence of sensible architecture that goes back to sustainable roots and a lot of passive design, whereby it's more energy conscious and in line with the current thinking of green technology and sustainability, and not so much emphasis on just copying the West, but creating a sort of a fusion between our vernacular and our modern sensibilities.
Coming back to the people behind architecture, the architects, do we have enough in Malaysia?
Currently, we are a bit low. We have one architect for 2,490 persons of population. And we ideally should be looking at 1,000 to 700, yeah, with our rate of growth. So there is a need for more architects.
Right.
And the pathway to architectural education is not so straightforward, because what you see from a degree program is just you get to be a graduate architect. Then further on, you need to get a professional exam to become a professional architect. So there is that stages that we are looking at.
From what I remember, there are parts 1, 2, and 3, right?
Yes.
How does this work?
The architectural education here is based almost same globally, whereby part one is the first degree,
right,
which is usually 3 years. Then you take a year out, then do your part two, which is another bachelor's degree, or a lot of the programs now are masters, and you then become a graduate architect. and you work for 2 years, and it's sort of in a sort of like a mentorship, then you take your professional exam. Upon passing that professional exam, only then can you call yourself a professional architect.
What differences are there for graduates of local universities compared with those from foreign universities? Do they still go through the same parts 1, 2 and 3 as well?
Yes, they do. The local universities get an automatically accredited from the Lembaga, which is our board of architects.
Right.
But not all the foreign schools are accredited. So you must get the universities that are accredited, or else you would have to sit to a process to get your part two, which is showing your portfolio and showing the work that you have done and the syllabus of that school to the board of architects.
So as a profession, what does PAM hope to achieve for the industry?
As a profession, PAM would like to improve the whole ecology of the building industry to make the industry better and easier to work in. Yeah, there's a lot of regulations that need to be streamlined to make us more competitive. I think the country itself is divided into this three-tier legislation, which we have the federal, state, and local authority, which sometimes create a lot of confusion, especially when you have a foreign investor coming in and they look at, you know, perhaps one area to another area is just side by side, but the laws might be considerably different in terms of getting, for example, building permits. So we are trying to make all that better and faster. And I think that is very important for the competitiveness of the country itself.
What improvements have you seen since then as a result of PAM's work?
For example, with involvement in the OSC process and working with KPKT, we have improved our World Bank rating in terms of getting building permits. We were very low at that time, and I think we have improved many steps now, and hopefully we'll improve even furthermore with more streamlining of the processes.
Architects' roles, are they just involved in the construction of the buildings per se, or does it extend to retrofitting and even interior design?
Architects, their role is actually at the top of the pyramid, and
right.
They are responsible for everything. And in their role as a professional, it's also to safeguard, you know, a lot of public interest as well.
Right.
And of course, if it is ID that is critical, then they would be, of course, responsible.
Recently, there have been news that local authorities like DBKL and MBPJ, some of them now require a certified architect's signature before allowing people to do renovations to their homes. How does that improve values of properties, for example?
The problem with interior design is that it's anything from adding a cabinet to renovating your house.
Right.
So the general rule is that if anything that affects increase of space or affects structure or generally affects
the safety of the building,
then you need an architect to sign off. And this is important for insurance purposes. And as a property owner, when you resell, you want to have the exact plan with the certificate of compliance according to what is at site now or at your house now, rather than, you know, when the buyer comes in and say, why it's so different from the original plans.
As a way to show added value to the property.
Yes.
We are speaking with Sali Adre Sarkum, Deputy President of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia. In a few moments, we'll talk more about how developers tend to build homes meant for one-off sales rather than making them more conducive to changes. We're back on BFM 89.9's The Property Show, where this week we talk with the Deputy President of Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia, Sali Adre Sarkum. All right, Sali, one issue that has been at the forefront of Malaysia's housing scenario is affordability. What is PAM's take on this?
As you well know, the issue of affordability is one that is very tricky. And it's not easy because we sit right in the smack of this growth of population, and we need a huge amount of housing every day It's been estimated in this region where China, Indonesia, India, with the Asian region, we need 5,000 new houses a day just to cope with population increase. And coupled with that is the change of our technologies, such as now people are talking about the new fourth
industrial revolution.
Yeah, so jobs are getting scarcer and are more combined and more concentrated. So
salaries are not going up.
You know, because machines are actually doing a lot of the work at a cheaper cost. So we need to find value for jobs as well. Mm-hmm. And the government is talking about high value jobs. And the problem with us is that affordability is also concurrent with global economical rates, meaning that, you know, we might find that a certain building method economical one at one time, but when our currency, say for example, has dropped now 25%, the global price of steel might remain the same. True. But for us, we feel that it's 25% more expensive because of the drop. So those kind of issues come into play, and it's very difficult to pinpoint the actual solution. And I don't think there's one silver bullet solution. It needs to be a combination of many, many parties sitting down together and really looking at this problem as a whole, not just the developers or architects or the government. It needs a collective mindset to look at the problem and perhaps do many certain pilot projects, then learning from those projects to come out with better affordable houses. Not to say that we don't have affordable houses, but as you well know, we could do better.
But then again, affordability is very subjective, because you do have some developers saying anything below 500,000 is affordable. And, you know, I suppose it depends on the area where you are building as well. What is PAM's engagement with all these stakeholders when it comes to coming up with ideas for affordable homes?
We engage with all the stakeholders. We are, of course, in the Building President Industries Council. We also engage with REDA. We engage with the government and agencies like PRIMA, and constantly talk about getting new ideas out there. We run competitions about housing. We run seminars and conferences about improving housing and the urban condition. All these are part of PAM's engagement with all the stakeholders to come up with a better solution for affordable housing.
Interesting that you should bring up your engagements with the government and REDA. From my previous interviews and meetings with REDA and Khazana, their issue with homes costs are so high, they depend on three main factors: construction, land, and compliance costs. KRI feels that all they need to do is adopt more IBS in their construction, and, you know, problem solved. Whereas REDA is of a different view. They complain that compliance costs are high. What's your take on this?
Well, our take is that, you know, they are looking at things from their perspective. And I think, of course, IBS is good. Mm-hmm. But when you offset that with the low cost of labor that we're taking, foreign labor and whatnot, I think for the developer, it makes it difficult to offset when IBS costs a bit more. Mm-hmm. So that's where compliance costs come in as well. Compliance costs means that you need to have a minimum baseline for safety, for quality, for your affordable housing. And I don't think you can skimp on that for public health.
Right.
Yeah. As well as, you know, you're talking about solutions. Again, I mentioned there's no single solution. It needs to be a combination of these solutions, as well as good design as well, because there is a lot that can be done by just applying good design. You do not get the economies of scale just simply by singular repetition, but perhaps there is a better way, for example, studying modular variations to create better building blocks, better neighborhoods, yeah, which will bring more value, but it does not actually translate directly to something that is technological.
Are we in the right direction though?
We are getting there slowly, but I think the important thing is that there needs to be more communication between all these parties and more tangible efforts to do projects that actually showcase what can be done. Because once you have a good, really good example, it can be replicated. Yeah.
Now, sustainability issues are another. Where developments should occur, is there a way to ensure that at the end of the day, there are fewer unsold units?
Yes, I think when you talk about, what you mean is more financial viability and sustainability. The thing is that housing is not just one off sale. Housing needs to be thought in the terms of it is going to be there forever. And a lot of the way that we are doing housing now is more of as a one-off sale. And we need to look at it as a continuous living organism. For example, if a flat, you know, is for just for people of a minimum income, when that person gets a bit more affluent, he will move out and somebody will move in. And that level of people will never care about that neighborhood. And what will happen to that neighborhood, it will eventually evolve into a slum. So we don't want that kind of situation. So we want to look at a design or a way to increase the, for example, to enable the unit to grow with the family or with their economic condition so that it's similar to what we are organically looking at when we're looking at a village. They don't move out of their house, they improve their houses and whatnot. So you create better neighborhoods and better cities. That's what the urban condition is all about, I assume. And if you really look into these design issues and not just about, you know, dollars and cents at the end of the day, then you start to create and see the value of how better design, better urbanism, better architecture can bring about solutions to solving these issues.
And on that note as well, PAM held a Housing and Urbanity Symposium 2017. Tell us about that.
It is to discuss these issues of housing and urbanism and the challenges that we face right now. Of course, we face many challenges and opportunities, as well as showcasing current technologies, current advancement, and current thinking in how housing is done. Yeah.
Will there be more being held?
Definitely. We have a committee called USHER. It's short for Urban Wellbeing, Sustainable Housing, and Urban Resilience, which is head by Architect Nazakia, one of our council members, which looks into all these these issues pertaining to urbanism, housing, well-being of cities. Yeah. You can go to our PAM website, www.pam.org.my, which all our events will be displayed.
That was Keith Kam speaking to Pertubuhan Architect Malaysia Deputy President Sally Adre Sakum. You can catch the conversation on podcast by downloading the BFM app on Google Play and the Apple App Store. Coming up, we have the news bulletin at the top of the hour, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.